You guys ready to do this?
Welcome to the Cap Space Wins Cubs podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Cap Space Wins Cubs podcast, episode 86 on the air. Everyone, Sports Network. I am your host, Hassan Ahmed. I am joined alongside, as per usual, my twin brother, Asad Ace Ahmed. Ace, how's it going, buddy?
Good, how are you, man?
Good. Do people want to know what the guests have to say in this podcast?
Well, we should hurry up and get the interview.
And by Hussein, who's the Moussaman? Who's how's it going?
What's up, boys?
No Andy this week.
Of course.
He's up to some debauchery on a Saturday night, I'm sure. No, I think he's going to visit his grandma. He's a very nice young man, Andy.
Well, he's also a bit of a liar, young man. He told us in the group chat, oh, I'm pretty much good. I only have hockey one time a week. I can record any day. And we're like, Saturday sounds good. And he's like, I'm out of town. I'm just like,
you know what? You're right.
You couldn't really record every day then, could you, Andy?
You're right. Andy, he's a known liar. He's a thief.
He'll have to defend himself next time he comes back.
He will. He'll have to log into his ADP and log these hours correctly. All right. Before we get started, we'd like to thank the title sponsor of this episode, No Name Hockey. No Name Hockey provides high-quality hockey sticks without breaking the bank. No more paying $300 plus for a twig. Try out No Name Hockey, offering high-end hockey sticks for the no-names out there. And the players currently making a name. Use code AREA51 for $10 off one item. Doubles as you buy more. So $2 gets you 20, $3 gets you 30, so on and so forth. Ace, how much does four items get you?
40, but that would really be double, right? It would just add the 10.
It's okay.
10 more, right?
It's 10 more, yeah.
It only doubles the first time?
I suppose. It's a stackable discount, is what I'm trying to tell you.
Because a double of 20 would be 40, double, not 30, yeah. So you're confusing the people.
Okay.
But thanks for
spreading. I'm just reading what I had on my script. Okay, I'm spreading misinformation on the internet. It happens all the time. All right. Okay, Ace outro time.
Pretty much, you ready for best bets? I need to get a best bet.
It's not time for best bets yet.
I don't think my bet headline, or actually
the game hasn't started yet, buddy.
It got postponed because the queen died.
Really?
Yeah.
There's no way that's
five
true.
Days of grieving.
What do you mean no name is not true? You bet on Liverpool, buddy? Like, that's literally
I bet on a tie.
Okay, right.
How did that happen? Never mind. You know, I'm shy. I'm going to touch
you guys go get your 5 days
I'm gonna
off.
I'm going to look up the score.
You guys are going to 5 days off work for the queen dying?
Yeah, we should technically get the day off.
Did we actually?
We're supposed to.
Well, I can't do that many of you guys work on a statutory.
Oh, my God. I wonder my bet hit.
Yours?
Did I know.
Bet on Monday Night Football?
No, I bet on the Detroit Lions making the playoffs.
Right. I'm the only one who bet not on a future.
I said we cash out.
Mine was a game today.
Well, it's a future now, buddy.
Yeah, you made a future.
See, yeah, the game I bet on got postponed.
Okay, when is
so
it
when's
being played
it
played
now?
Played
now? Yeah.
They haven't decided, I guess, yet.
Okay, all right. Grief. All good. It doesn't matter.
Well, it kind of matters to me.
Okay, if you've read the title of this episode, you know that...
What's the title of this episode?
I don't know what it is yet, but the people who are listening to it will have already known it because they'll see it when they click the episode. The bottom line is they're going to know... Chris Faber from Canucks Conversation has joined us.
And Canucks Army.
Joined us. We've already recorded that interview, so we'll get to that a little bit later on this episode.
But in about Chris... 5 minutes.
No.
10 minutes.
Okay. But anyway.
Maximum 10 minutes?
Are you done?
4 minutes. We have 6 minutes left.
we're gonna record until I say stop. Faber was very generous at this time. We recorded a very lengthy
interview. You remember WNBA basketball? Could I get Sun plus 195?
Yeah,
is it Las Vegas Aces?
I'll take
that. That's live right now?
I didn't even know that was a team name.
You probably can't watch it anywhere either.
Connecticut Sun. Is it sunny in Connecticut?
What a terrible name.
Connecticut.
Doesn't make any sense.
Connecticut's not even sun? Sunny, I don't think.
I don't know.
Like, where is
it's like the
okay,
Northeast,
Hussein,
right?
You have a computer in front of you? Why don't you start Googling?
I'm going to guess where it is. I'm guessing like...
Euro basketball plus 650 on the Czech Republic to make a comeback against Greece right now, guys.
Okay. Hey, just so you know,
all those lines are courtesy of Bet99, by the way.
Hey, by the time people listen to this, this episode doesn't come out until Monday. These games have all been long over by then. You're not helping anyone.
Oh, I knew it. It's in New England.
Okay, so
what's the weather like?
I mean, I wouldn't describe that as particularly sunny, would you? Oh, everyone's
typing vigorously now.
Everyone's chugging.
Yeah, that's the other thing. You kept typing in the favor of you. I could hear it. I kept trying to turn your microphone off. You're going to type. You got to warn me or turn your microphone off.
It's Connecticut sunny.
Because like, you got this crazy keyboard that just clicks, clicks, clackety, click the whole time.
I mean, it's kind of warm today.
What's going on here? I'm looking at the average temperature of Connecticut. January is the coldest season there, by the way. And what's the weather?
It's all in Fahrenheit. It's 22 degrees Fahrenheit cold.
Yes.
Yeah, it's very cold, right?
It's freezing, cold. So
I would say it's not that sunny in Connecticut.
Well, okay. There's a different. Okay. No, never mind.
Let's move on from this.
Yeah. Never mind.
I do kind of like not talking about hockey right away. You know? I feel like
save it for the guest.
All right. Anyway. Yeah, we delved into a number of talks topics with Faber. Talked about the JT Miller contract extension. Obviously, we gave our thoughts on that last week. Got into what Faber thought about it. Talked about what he's seen from some of the summer informal skate. Talked about Kuzmenko. I think you muted my mic there, Ace.
I did.
No, you didn't. Okay. Kuzmenko. Pullman, Hughes. do the right side. But let's delve into it a bit ourselves here, guys. Quinn Hughes reportedly went to the Canucks management and coaching staff and said that he's willing to play the right side of the defense to help out the team this year. What are you guys' thoughts on that? You guys want Quinn Hughes on the right side of the defense? I firmly yes. And if this works out, this development would be the biggest development for the Canucks decor since drafting Quinn Hughes. Tell me I'm wrong. Hussein taking a picture over there.
You're not wrong, because ever since the Canucks first drafted Quinn Hughes, I always said it's so hard to get right-handed defensemen. And I remember the minute we drafted this guy, I said the Canucks would solve a lot of problems if they just made him a right-handed defenseman right as soon as he got to the NHL. And I always said it was the perfect time to experiment in 2018 when the team was missing the playoffs and he was only coming to play 5 games. And he's playing with Daddy Luke Shen. Like, what could go wrong? Let him play on the right side. It was going to be an absolute home run. And this is back in my day where I still thought Jet Wu was going to play on the left side. But
what? Jet Wu was right-handed.
Well, I always thought, you know what? I thought he was left-handed. I've wanted this, and I'd be thrilled if the
Canucks. Maybe you could give us the tips. I know in your minor hockey career, you were actually a big right-handed defenseman.
Who played the left side? I love playing the left side. Oh, that's also like a big problem I have with NHL. This is a separate thing about NHL coaches. I'm going to say it anyway. I don't understand why these people are like, oh, he's right-handed, he can only play the right side. He's left-handed, he can only play the left side. You tell me Quinn Hughes, you know, at age 13, he's obviously the best kid in his minor hockey association has ever seen, and they're like, oh, yeah, sorry, Quinn, I know you're like our best player, so. You know, we're not going to make you play the other position. Like, you played every position growing up, Quinn. I wouldn't even be surprised if you played your offside until you went to college hockey. I could say, even if you're like a guy playing the BCHL, even if you're a guy playing in college, the BCHL, CHL, whatever it is, I guarantee you the best of the best players there will play the offside if the team needs it. So why does it change when you get to the NHL? I just truly don't understand it. And like, for me,
especially for the elite players.
Yeah, like the guy like Quinn Hughes, he's not
okay, but you guys are missing the point. You're like, the idea is you maximize their potential on their left side. Like, left shot on the left side.
Sure, I agree.
Now the idea is, okay, you're going to put your best defenseman or best player in a position that's not optimal for him to succeed. Is that the way we should go?
That's not what I think.
No, but
Quinn Hughes is such an elite dynamic skater that I don't think it matters. I don't think
But what if it's going to be an adjustment? You think he's going to just jump into the right side and start playing exactly how he does right now?
If a player in the NHL, if there's just a player on the Canucks that could do it without missing a beat, it's Quinn Hughes.
I completely agree. And I was just going to say, like, how much difference is this really than, like, getting a center to play the wing? Or, like, a winger getting to play center?
I feel like this is such an overrated notion.
I think it's overrated.
This is less difficult than a winger learning to play center, but more difficult than a winger or than a center moving to the wing?
Yes.
I get what
you're saying.
Moving a defenseman to the other side is more difficult than a winger
learning how to play
winger.
No, a winger learning to play center is clearly much more difficult.
That's what I said.
You said the opposite.
No, you said the opposite the first time.
Oh, you said the opposite. Yeah.
Whatever.
Hey, you know it's recorded. You can listen back and you'll know.
Okay, it's fine. We all agree, though.
So you're saying it's harder to move a winger to center than it is to move a defenseman to his offside? Yes?
Yes.
But it's easier than a center moving to the wing? No?
No. Being a center...
Okay. Let me just play for you in order. It does the easiest to hardest. Center to wing is the easiest position to play.
Obviously. Yes.
Obviously.
Defenseman switching sides to the next, and then winger to center?
Okay. Yes. I agree. What about, like, forward to goalie or something?
I get what you're...
Coach to GM?
I get what people say about, like, oh, you know, you want to put your best players in, like, the best position to succeed. But, like, if there's... Why would you not?
I just think you guys are out to lunch. You think there's going to be no adjustment period?
Why would you?
I think there's no adjustment period.
Okay, I don't know about that. There's preseason for a reason. Training camp for a reason. Exactly.
Oh, wow. 2 days in Whistler?
Preseason,
yeah. It's like 2 weeks long. The NHL, like, everyone's... The first preseason game is, like, on the 22nd or something, and the season doesn't start until October 12th. So, yeah, like...
Okay, at the end of the day, someone who's left-handed is going to have to play right side for the Canucks? Ekman Larson.
No, that's what I'm saying. If you don't... If you
subscribe to the theory that you're handicapping these players... Is that politically correct to say?
Yeah,
you're handicapping these players by putting them in their offside. Why would I handicap
the less
skilled player?
Because you want to maximize the best guy, and your second best guy, if you put Ekman Larson on the right side, he's obviously going to get paired with Hughes, so he's going to play with the next best guy.
Well, like, if you stayed on the left side,
you solidify and legitimize that top pair.
You can legitimize it when you just play the right side and Ekman Larson played on the left.
Like, you could do that too.
I
just think you're not getting the most.
I think what, like, Faber kind of touched us in the interview. I think at the end of the day, Ekman Larson and Hughes has got to be the first pair. Give them both a turn on the right side and see what works.
I'm fine with that.
I don't know. I mean, like,
Clint Hughes is all over the ice. It's like 15 feet when you line up for faceoffs. What difference does it really make?
Yeah, I mean,
the only different, really, really difficult thing is going to be maybe defending on the rush. But like I said, Quinn Hughes is, like, not just one of the best skaters in the Vancouver Canucks. He's one of the best skaters in the entire NHL. Like, I do not have a problem or worry about Quinn Hughes defending on the rush.
Also, we go back to the great year 2011. Edler and Herrhoff was the Canucks' first pair. That's two lefties together.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's not unheard of. Like, suggesting to move your best defenseman to the offside.
You're talking yourself into an ace.
I'm not saying it's a bad idea. I'm just saying I would try moving Ekman Larson there first.
The only other solution I have to this is, like,
it would also make Ekman Larson a lot more useful than he is right now.
Than he is right now. I agree. But the only other, like, solution I would have to this problem is, like, is there an avenue where the Canucks just explore, you know, maybe putting Myers and Hughes together again and just, like, just see what happens one more time with these guys as a top pair?
I think Myers can't handle the just the amount of minutes that first pairing guy would take.
Once Tyler Myers plays like more than 21 minutes a night, it's just like chaos.
You think OEL playing more than 21 minutes a night?
I think he is better equipped to handle it. Yeah.
I think Ekman Larson has been like a top pair D man at times in his career.
Myers has never been a top pair D man, so
yeah, even at his best. Okay, yeah, I'd agree with that. Well,
I think Ekman Larson's got like some good defensive savviness, and he's a good breakout pass and can actually move the puck. Tyler Myers is kind of just like, you know, can skate well, but his decision making might not be there.
Well, this is actually kind of just touching on what we were talking about last night, is that the Canucks are just miscasting Tyler Myers anyway and trying to make him a shutdown defenseman, which is something he's clearly not. So if you put Hughes and OEL together, then does that even, like, you could maybe, you know, potentially have a better season for Myers, because now you could let him, you know, give him the green light to be a little bit more offensive depending on who's playing on the left side with him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's gonna be a Dermott or I don't even know who will Jagger, Rathbone.
Those are the only three defensemen I know we're gonna play. After that, it's like,
I mean, yeah, it's Myers, Ekman Larson, and Hughes.
Do you think Shen is most likely gonna get himself?
I feel like if Rathbone makes the lineup, Shen has to play with Rathbone.
Shen's not playing on a pair with Myers, right?
No, but you'd think he's probably locked into a spot
with Rathbone. That's what I
was thinking. No. I don't think Rathbone's a lock at all.
Rathbone's definitely battling for a spot.
I just have a feeling
it's down between Pullman, Dermott, and Rathbone
for the last two spots on the left side.
You got the four locks.
Yeah.
In my opinion, the four locks on the back end are Hughes, Ekman Larson, Myers, Shen.
Yeah.
And then you've got two spots left for Rathbone, Dermott, or Pullman.
The right
or
side,
DeKeyser, I guess, also.
The right side's pretty much locked up then, if you think about it, because it's one of Hughes or OEL. Pardon me, is going to move to the right. Myers is obviously the second best, like, right shot D man, and then Shen's going to be on the third pair. So, like, there's still going to be someone, like, who's not, like, you think...
Okay, well, if you say that, there's no way Tucker Pullman's playing his offside as a right shot D-man, so Tucker Pullman is going to be your seventh defenseman automatically.
And then you put Dermott and Rathbone in there?
That would be the illogical thing, but
or,
I don't...
Or, like, DeKeyser, like you mentioned.
Do you like Dermott with Myers or Rathbone with Myers? Well, neither of those are stylistic fits with Tyler Myers.
I mean, I like Rathbone with Shen.
Well, I mean,
I like Dermott with Shen too,
though. I was a big advocate for just give Quinn Hughes and Travis Dermott a shot together, and Travis Dermott's had experience playing on his right side.
You're worried about Ekman Larson handling top pairs. You think Travis Dermott is going to eat 22?
Well, he's a guy who's played on his right side his like entire career for the Maple Leafs, and he's literally played in the top four with Morgan Riley for extended stretches.
I just don't know.
I feel like that.
I don't know if Travis Dermott is
that could round out your pairs a lot better too. Then, because then you keep the Myers and Ekman Larson one, which was
because that was so successful.
It was good last year.
I'm joking. They were actually pretty solid.
They were actually pretty good last year until Ekman Larson got hurt. I think so. I mean, like you said, there's going to be one of the top four is going to be my God. One of the top four defensemen is going to be, you know, not a top four defenseman because we don't have. Sorry, not we. The Canucks don't have four of them.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions at the back end still there for the Canucks, so I think we'll kind of see as training camp approaches here, and we'll delve on there. Kind of other news or no, DeKaiser, Ace mentioned, signed a PTO. I don't have high hopes for him. Analytics seem terrible, and I'm a slave to my computer.
They're not even going to re-sign him.
I think he's just there to be the veteran for the preseason
squad games. Yeah,
I mean, just take, like, you know, help O'Yell and Myers out.
Young stars coming up soon here as well. No Lekker Mackey, unfortunately. Canucks have a pretty bleak roster.
So there's nothing to watch.
So there's really nothing to watch.
Klimovich, guys. Klimovich.
Yep. This is a big season for Klimovich as well. Like, if he doesn't start to shell something in the AHL, like, I would have. Well, I already have serious concerns about Klimovich.
Well, he's also a second-round pick, so it's like, you know, we weren't expecting that much to begin with anyway.
I think there was pretty high hopes from around here when he got drafted. Anyways, we're not going to delve into Klimovich talk right now.
I don't know. Don't you have some hot take on the Klimovich?
Well,
no. We're not a podcast show.
We're not a podcast show.
Prospect. We're not a prospect show.
Okay. Well, we were talking about entirely about the right side, left side defense. One guy who could fix it, Nils Lundqvist. I think we should go around, maybe give what's like the maximum offer you're making if you're the coach.
Third round draft pick.
The Hoaglander, maybe second round draft. The Hoaglander Lundqvist swap is not happening anymore.
I think Hoaglander still has got to go to underlying profile. You got to give him a chance this season.
I'd be okay with it, but yeah, I think you got to give Hoaglander another chance.
Yeah, okay. I would agree. I feel like
Hoaglander.
I mean, especially after like signing that.
Shut up.
after signing that Miller contract. You know, we agreed last episode the contention window is open, so I feel like you have to be okay stomaching, like, you know, a third round draft pick.
Yeah.
To get a right shot.
Obviously, even if he,
what'd you do?
I mean, you know what? Who I think we should get, the Canucks should get. I mean, pardon me, is if you kind of look at the situation in Pittsburgh based on what's going to shake loose there.
I thought we were going to say the other thing.
What?
Your trade deadline proposal. What's your trade deadline proposal for the fans? Who are the Canucks going to get this year? The deadline? Haverday?
Oh, Haverday get Klingberg on Anaheim. Obviously, like that is like the key move. Anyway,
Disco Stu, is that you?
Anyway, you know, I was gonna save that little tidbit for like the trade deadline show when the Canucks are battling for top spot in the division. They want to pull us through their blue line.
Okay.
Anyway, I was going to say that I think if you kind of look at the Pittsburgh depth chart, either one of Pierre Oliver Joseph or Ty Smith is going to shake loose.
They just
traded for Ty Smith, but I mean, like, you're just looking at the blue line. It fills up quickly there, so I think one of those guys is going to get sent down and go through waivers. I think Canucks should take a flyer on either of those guys if they get through.
And
I doubt Smith gets through, but I am interested in Joseph there, who's a former high draft pick as well. I think he's got some upside. Well, I don't know if you guys would feel about that.
I mean, that's like the kind of move that the Canucks, like, they just put themselves in position. That's the
kind of player that they'd be acquired who would help the right side. It's not going to be like, oh.
Yeah, it's a long shot.
It's also a Russian defenseman out of Washington requires waivers this year, first round draft pick. Couple years ago,
Alexei Alekshinov or something.
Yeah, so he's a left shot guy though, but you know, maybe worth the spot as well if he.
That's what it is for the Canucks now.
Like, I think the Canucks just need to just get like a bunch of those kind of guys and just see what happens.
I think Washington to be active on waivers though. I think Washington to be active on waivers.
You think so?
Well, I think so.
I always say that too because if you just take like an abundance of like those kinds of players, like you never know. Like I always say, you could just find like the next year's like Toronto, like sorry, not Toronto. But you can find the next year's Michael Bunting on defense if you just keep taking all these waiver shots at players like that.
That's true. And if you can bury the salary, then might as well just use.
And like to be honest, like the names are throwing out. The Canucks like 7th, 8th defenseman, like Tucker Poulin's not.
There are currently 7. Right shot defensive for free agents. PK Subban, Anton Stralman, Will Riley.
Who is that?
Michael Stone, okay. Alex Biega.
Biega!
Brendan Manel.
Who?
Nelson Nogier.
What teams did these people play for?
I have no idea. Nelson Nogier played no games last year. Neither did Brendan Manel.
Okay, that makes sense. Really, really very coveted.
I feel like Biega.
Will Riley had no qualifying offer.
Who the hell is Will Riley?
That just sounds like a fake name.
That just sounds like
NBC
sports generated guy. He is in the Pittsburgh organization. Oh, Pittsburgh.
Oh, they're just leaking. They're leaking defensemen.
4-year college guy played at the Rensselaer Polytechnical Institution. Great. NCAA hockey. Okay, we're going down the rabbit hole here.
Bring that Bulldog Biega. I was actually
bring back Bulldog Biega.
I was actually fine with
nothing can help us more than the 34-year-old Alex Biega.
I loved Biega.
Remember when he played forward without complaining about it?
Yeah, I love Biega.
All right. We've done enough here.
I think Biega could really be the difference this year.
Okay.
Just like Danny DeGeyser.
Can we get a favor now?
Both of them together?
Can we get a pair? Can we get a favor now?
I think third pair, Biega DeGeyser. That's my final thought.
Let's get to Chris Faber. All right, we're going to get into it with Chris Faber joining us. We delved into a number of topics, talked about Miller, talked about Pullman, talked about Quinn Hughes, talked about expectations of the Canucks. We talked about Kuzmenko. We also got to your questions from Twitter. So if you dropped a question on Twitter, we definitely read it on there with Chris Faber. Yeah, we'll take a little break here. Ace will get Faber on the other side here. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Capspace Wins Cups podcast. As mentioned on the other side of the break here, we are now joined by his second appearance of the podcast, Chris Faber from Canucks Conversation and Canucks Army. Chris, how's it going, man?
Awesome, guys. Doing really good. Just excited for the season here. I guess less than 1 week away from now, I'll be in Penticton for the Young Stars Tournament. Less than 2 weeks away from now, Whistler for training camp. Guys, it's all happening. It's a good time of the year.
Yep, we just started picking up our recording as well because we're just right around the corner for hockey season, as you mentioned. A lot of key dates right now. September always kind of feels like the unofficial start of the new year for me with hockey starting, the NFL just get going and stuff like that. But we're still about a month away, more than about a month away from Canucks playing for games that actually mean anything. But obviously the Canucks have made a variety of moves this offseason, so there's a lot of questions kind of circling around the team. Obviously, this is the first time we've had you on the show since JT Miller signed his contract. We kind of all gave our thoughts last week, but I did want to kind of get your opinion on the Miller contract, just your general thoughts on it, and kind of what it means for Bo Horvat, because it seems like that's what everybody in the market wants to know.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, I look at the money and I look at the years, and I think that, on a competing team, I think that's a deal that you can definitely live with. I think it's looking at JT Miller at $8 million, he's able to keep up what he's able to do in the past couple of years here, even just, even steadily kind of fall off a little bit as the years go by. You're looking at a contract that I think is going to look half decent for the first half for sure. And I think this is the situation that you find yourself in when you are in the spot of being a team that wants to compete for a Stanley Cup. You sign these guys at the age 27, 28, 29 to these big type of deals. I'm not 100% sure that's where the Canucks are at right now. I almost look back at it and think of the trade for JT Miller, where does this help push them over the edge to get to that point? And I think making the trade for JT Miller at the time definitely looked like it made the team improve. He was a guy who was, been the leading scorer since he was traded here for that trade. And I mean, yeah, it's great. He's a player who's going to bring a ton for you on the ice. But is this the time where you want to invest in a long-term deal at $8 million per when your team has just, completely missed the playoffs in the bubble? You're nowhere even close, finishing worse in the Canadian division there. And then last season, I mean, yeah, it was great to see what Boudreaux was able to do with this team. But for me, this contract it's done at a time that makes you really think like, wow, this management group is really investing in what they saw in the final, whatever it was, games with Bruce Boudreaux last year. Like, they think that is this team moving forward. I think that's why they signed this contract with Miller.
Yeah, so you kind of mentioned, Miller and how he was having a great season all the way through, and then Boudreaux kind of comes in and the team kind of takes off. A couple of kind of follow-ups there. One is management kind of came in here and said, we want to create cap space. They kind of said some kind of veiled remarks about the team. It kind of seemed like they weren't happy with the group, yet they've kind of doubled down on everyone and brought them back, which I found a little odd. I want to hear your thoughts on that, and I also want to hear your thoughts about where Miller kind of falls in the hierarchy within the Canucks right now, because I think most people would agree he was the Canucks' best player, best skater, I'd say, not including Demko. But the team didn't really start to take off and kind of transcend to, go fighting for a playoff spot until Pedersen took off. And in my view, Miller, I think, at best, is maybe the fourth most valuable player on the team, if you count Pedersen, Hughes, and Demko all ahead of him. Would you agree with that, or do you think, the Canucks can be a legit cup threat where JT Miller is, deemed as the team's best player and first line center?
Yeah, I think I'd probably push back a little bit. I mean, I know Demko's been excellent. Mm-hmm. I think the only thing for me is, like, you guys know, I'm like, my huge fan of goalies. So, like, I don't think that, goalies could fall off anything.
Yeah.
No player's good as well. I think you see it so much more with goalies. But to me, like, specifically in this time frame of when you're going to see JT Miller be at what you hope is to see his best. I think we saw potentially his best season of his career last year, but you're hoping that he can kind of stay around that level and, be an 80-plus point player for the next couple seasons anyways. To me, this contract is interesting because this season coming up, you're going to have a $5.25 million. And in my eyes, I look at the way that they use this player. I look at the way that Bruce Boudreaux likes to put this guy with line mates that are going to give him the most success. And I think, like, as much as a lot of Canucks fans want to see Elias Pettersson become that guy who's driving the offense. In my eyes, this organization, at least for the next few years here, I think they're looking at JT Miller being the guy for offense. And I think that's a spot that you wouldn't have thought maybe 2-3 years ago when we started to see Pettersson make his rookie season and you know win the Calder and everything that he did in those first 2 years and all the potential before the injuries kind of hurt him a little bit. I think they wanted to see Pettersson be the guy.
Yep.
And I wonder now, like even on this like the remaining term here on Elias Pettersson's contract, we look at 2 more seasons before he's an RFA again. Like I don't think those 2 years they're asking Pettersson to be the guy. I'm thinking that they're hoping he takes a step again. Mm-hmm. And starts to become like a point per game player.
Yeah.
But I wonder if this might even help him a little bit, just taking a little bit of pressure off. Because to me, it feels like this coaching staff, this management group, this whole organization, probably the players in the room as well, like they're looking at JT Miller as the guy. This guy just had 99 points last year,
yeah.
Right? Like he is right now the guy for the Vancouver Canucks, as much as I think Quinn Hughes brings so much to a game. And I think he's the most valuable player probably on this whole roster. I think that they're looking at this team in the current state that they're at, and they're thinking, JT Miller's our guy. He is the guy from the Vancouver Canucks.
All right. Yeah, sort of a follow-up question about JT Miller here. We've seen Boudreau play Miller mostly at center since he got here. Before that, Travis Green pretty much he did play center a little bit, took some faceoffs, but pretty much was on the wing for most of his time with Green as the coach. Boudreau's called Miller his first line center. Is JT Miller a center, and is he going to be a center for the duration of this contract? Because he's getting paid like a first line center. So you tell me, is this guy going to be the first line center, or is he going to be moved to the wing? And what's the future outlook on the contract in terms of him playing center?
Yeah, I think you sure as hell hope he is going to be a center. I mean, just like watching the way that the winger market has gone over the past 2 off-seasons here, he's not getting paid like. I think you're expecting him to be a guy who can play center for your team. And you've kind of heard Bruce Boudreau talk about this throughout the offseason when he's been asked about it, talking about the strength of this team and talking about the things that he's really happy with. And to me, I think Boudreau is going to end up using JT Miller, Elias Pettersson, Bo Horvat down the middle. And don't get me wrong, that's an excellent way to start your team. Like, I do think that the backbone of your team is the defense core, and that's something that's going to get you to the next level. Look at almost every team. Like, I even looked at, like, just think about, like, the Edmonton Oilers, right? Like, the way that their roster is constructed over the years was not great, right? Like, a lot of front-end talent. It just felt like last year, like, I was just watching games and seeing, like, the defense pairing for the Oilers in the playoffs. I'm like, okay, I can see why they're actually a team that should be competing in the playoffs this year, because their defense is poor. Like, it wasn't as bad as it was for the Oilers in the past years. And obviously, they rely on their top-end guys. But to me, that's still going to be the thing that's going to end up getting this Canucks team to the next level. Is going to have to rely on the backbone of that defense core, but kind of having like a secondary backbone and having 3 centers that are that strong down the middle, that's another thing that you can rely on as well. And I think they're kind of balancing out the weaknesses on the defense core with what they have in net. I mean, Demko's going to save you on a lot of nights, but just kind of thinking about it, like I do think he will be a center throughout a good portion of the remaining, 8 years now with the Vancouver Canucks. I'm curious to see what happens with Elias Pettersson. Is he ever going to be back on the wing? Are they going to try and get something going with the Lotto line again? Like, I think of it with the roster, like, right now, if you were to try Pettersson on the wing and say, like, it doesn't even really matter to me, like, you know, maybe, I don't think it's going to happen, but, like, say Jason Dickinson's your third line center, or say even Curtis Lazar is your guy playing with the third line as your center. The depth that they already have on the wings when we're talking about a roster that is featuring Miller, Horvat, and Pettersson down the middle is so deep. But let's mix it up a little bit. Like, let's put Dickinson there on the third line at center and just say it happens. He has this ridiculous bounce back where he can actually play 3C. Then you're literally talking on the wings. You'll have Pettersson, Besser, Garland, Kuzmenko, Podfolzin and Mikheyev, Pearson, Hudline. That's 4 lines of centers of players who can play in top six in certain teams around the NHL. So if they're going to rely on what they have with Miller, Horvat, and Pettersson, I think it's going to be a thing that you can really build a lot of different lines down the middle with, and they have the wingers to be able to, you know, help these centers achieve and get to their top-end potential. But it will be curious to see, like, man, if they do put Pettersson, you know, probably playing center more, like you guys kind of mentioned there, but have Miller take the faceoff and play as more of a winger, I wonder how much more you can get out of Miller, because him playing center for most of the season last year, he was putting up a ton of points. I know a lot of that came on the power play. This is a guy who looks even more dangerous when he's actually playing the wing and being able to, you know, forecheck real hard. I don't think he backchecks as hard as he forechecks. So if you're able to get him back to forechecking that hard in a winger role, like, you could even see more offense there. But it's going to depend on if you can trust one of maybe Lazar or Dickinson to be that 3C. And right now, I don't think that's going to happen. So I do think they're going to end up going with Miller, Horvat, and Henderson down the middle, at least for this.
Yeah, so obviously you were touching on the center depth there, and as most people who listen to this podcast know, none of us are believers in Jason Dickinson, so it's going to be pretty likely that it's Horvat, Miller, Pettersson down the middle, like you mentioned there. And, you know, in signing this JT Miller contract, you know, the Canucks are, you know, essentially putting all their chips in. You know, they believe in this core, and they're trying to, you know, whether fans like it or not, they're trying to contend right now. So, I mean, to your best estimation, is it even, like, a possibility that Bo Horvat gets traded? And if not, if they look to bring him back this season, like, what would your estimation of a contract look like for him?
Yeah, I think I'm going to guess that they're going to bring him back. I don't think that this is a team that, you know, unless the deal makes sense. And I don't think, you know, I do think that, like, bringing in a new regime, bringing in a new management group, like, this management group wasn't here when they made Horvat a captain. So I don't think they have as much of a tie to that as much as the previous regime. So I do think that if the right trade comes down the pipe, I mean, he's 27 years old. He's going to UFA next season, which I think is such a thing that maybe wasn't talked about as much with the JT Miller deal, where I really think that was the thing that was really limiting teams being that interested in giving up a big package, is that they had to make a huge offer to him for his next contract. And, like, you know, seeing him come in at 8 million times 7, I think if teams would have been able to sign that, we would have seen a lot more trade interest. With Horvat, like, I do think his next deal is somewhere around 7 million. Like, I think if his agent gets him $7 million, he's going to be, you know, his agent deserves a raise for sure. He's going to get a higher percentage of that deal. But I can see that deal coming in somewhere kind of in like the 6.25 to 6.75 area. I think Horvat's proven that he is a player that you would like to have. Like, he's an excellent 3C. If he's your 3C, like, you're laughing. You love him in that role. Do you love paying your third line center $6.5 million? Probably not. But if you're getting that much, you know, gain on other teams when that's what your third line center is, and he's matching up against other teams' bottom sixes, like, damn, boys, like, that is a good setup for Horvat to be able to be another 30 goal scorer moving forward. The only question is, yeah, like, that, the money that he's going to make, like, I do think he's going to get that 8 years. I think he's a guy who probably wants to stay here in Vancouver, and I do think locking him up, you know, for next season and 8 years is probably the best bet for a guy who's going to be 28 when he signs that deal. So I'm in the range of kind of, you know, if the Canucks end up getting him for less than 6.25, I'm thinking, wow, they got an incredible deal here. But if they end up paying more than $7 million, yeah, they probably, I don't know, I don't want to say overpaid, but I don't think they got a great deal at today's date of signing if it's over $7
million. No, fair enough. Let's kind of shift gears from the Miller talk. I know people have lots of thoughts about that, but we did kind of want to get into some of the training camp stuff, or not training camp stuff, I guess, kind of the informal summer skates. You've obviously been out at eight rinks, or Scotia Barn, I guess, these days, watching a lot of the players, you know, kind of trickle back into town. I know Ace is senior there. He works there. He sees you every day, he says. We just kind of want to get into what you've seen from some of the guys who have been there. Guy I'm very curious about, I've seen you, you know, post a couple of clips. I saw you post a clip of him trying to stop Jason Dickinson on the rush there. That sequence ended exactly how I thought it would, where nothing happened. How's Tucker Poolman looked? Obviously, he had a lot of injuries, migraines, concussions, a lot of complicating factors. You never want to see a guy get injured, but how has he looked? Is he healthy? What have you heard from the organization? And if he is healthy and ready to play, what is he to the Canucks right now? Because, you know, I kind of try to chart out my lines. I often forget about him. Is he like a 7-8 defenseman right now? Is he squeaking into the sixth spot? Where do you see Poolman, and how's his health right now?
Yeah, I kind of look at it like, if he's healthy, to me, he's on that third pairing. He's playing right shot defense. That's if he's 100% healthy. I'm a little bit higher on Poolman than probably the average Canucks fan is. Like, in my eyes, he is. Like, he's a guy that I think is solid on your third line as the right pairing guy. If he is healthy and he's playing like we've seen him play as an NHLer in the past, I'm in the camp where I really do believe that he is a guy who would be on that third pairing. I think he is a better option in my eyes than moving Travis Dermott to the right side and playing him with Jack Rathbun on the third pairing. I think that Poolman's play style is something that fits with both Dermott or Rathbun, depending who you want to use there. on the third pairing, and I think it's a guy that is going to be able to let a player like Jack Rathbone, if he is the guy in that spot, be able to play his game, be offensive, and, you know, be able to kind of step up and play a little bit more. Like, I don't think Tucker Freeman does much except play just defense, mm-hmm. right? Like, he doesn't need to be the guy in the offensive zone chipping in or getting down deep in the O zone. Like, he's just a player who needs to be back there defending and using his size and his reach to kind of just be a defenseman. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's going to be 100% healthy. I mean, I've been trying to talk to him throughout this camp and requesting him every day. We're waiting for that to. I think the Canucks organization is waiting for kind of a bigger group to talk to Fullman for his first meeting with the media. So we're probably going to have to wait till training camp to really hear about what this guy's summer has been like and what the recovery has been. But I think it's a great sign to see him out of these summer skates. Like, there's a lot of players that aren't in summer skates that could easily be here. Like, I haven't seen Oliver Ekman-Larsson out there at all. I haven't seen certain defensemen out there that are, Jack Rathbone, these type of players who could be here for skates. I think it's definitely a positive step in the right direction to have him already here in early September in Vancouver, skating with the team, testing things out, because I don't want to show up to training camp on day one and just, he can only do half a practice and knock it out of him. Like, this guy is right now, he is going into contact in these drills. Obviously, it's nothing too crazy, but he is at least not limited in any way from what we've seen in practice so far. And I don't know, he looks like Tucker Freeman to me so far early on in the summer.
Faber, this wouldn't be a Canucks podcast if we didn't talk about the right side of the Canucks defense. obviously, lots of talk about Oliver Ekman-Larsson potentially moving over to the right side. Quinn Hughes approached the coaching staff about playing the right side. What do you make of either of those options? How would you line it up? Just your thoughts about the right side of the defense. And is moving Hughes or Ekman-Larsson to the right side going to solve anything?
Yeah, and you know what? I think a lot of things for the Canucks over the past, three seasons, we've seen a lot of players live up to their potential at certain times. And, especially the bubble year where it just felt like everything went right and weren't injuries. And, I mean, even Chris Tanev going down in that bubble season, but also coming back by the time they came back, like, it just, certain things have gone the Canucks' way, I think, a lot on the ice in certain degrees. If you're looking at this defense core and you're thinking, like, if I'm going to take an absolute ass hack here and try and hit a grand slam with this defense core, I'm looking at Quinn Hughes and Oliver Ekman-Larsson as your top pairing. And what way are you going to do that? Is it Hughes on the right side? Is it Ekman-Larsson on the right side? I think I even just said it on our last episode of the show that it should be Oliver Ekman-Larsson on the right side. But now the more I've thought about it, the more I've, had the idea of Quinn Hughes playing the right side. Like, I think it might be interesting to see what he looks like over there, right? Like, it's a completely different way of starting the play if you're on the right side, whether it be a face-off in the offensive zone or defending a rush coming down on you and you're on the right side. I do think Quinn Hughes might be the better option in that spot. And it really does open up a lot of space kind of just through the rest of your defense core. And to me, it would make things really interesting because I think so much, I guess just so many people look at the top four of a defense core and like, man, if they were to go with Quinn Hughes and OEL as their top pairing, that's all the way I'm looking at the defense core. I'm looking at it as a top pairing and a bottom four because mm-hmm. they're going to play the wheels off of that top pairing if those two players are playing together. And then you're kind of just thinking like Myers is going to find his minutes somewhere. But I think the question has been like, is it Dermott into your top four? But I'm not even really worried about like what the top four rounds out as because I really think you're talking about a bottom four at that point. You're not leaning on two pairings so much. You're really just going to be leaning on that huge Ekman-Larsson pairing if that's what we see happen.
Yeah.
Well, Faber, ever since you decided to come on our show again, I've been dying to ask you about this. Andre Kuzmenko, I've been very excited when the Canucks first signed him and, won the sweepstakes per se. But, lots of times those guys are coming out of the KHL and, like, obviously the reports about him is that his skating's not the greatest. You've obviously had the opportunity to watch him live with a lot of other guys. So I was just wondering, like, is his skating a cause for concern or does he look up to NHL speed, in your opinion? And additionally, like during the season, what should an expectation be for his point totals?
Yeah, I think I don't think the skating is going to be a massive worry. I think it probably is the weakest part of his NHL game right now. Like, I do think, I mean, I like his hands. I like the release on his shot. We've seen him up there at the summer skates. And, like, the guy can shoot the puck absolutely. Like, he does consistently get really good shots off. And he looks like an NHL player when he's shooting the puck. He looks like an NHL player when he's receiving a pass in his skates or skating up the ice and not breaking strides to receive a pass, even just dangling around defense. And like, he looks like an NHL player in a lot of those ways. And and I haven't really thought it in summer skates that the speed has been much of a concern. I thought that he's moving decently well. I don't think his feet move as fast, but he seems to gain a good amount of momentum off of the pushes that he has. And it is going to be interesting. I don't think it's all just about how he moves. I think the question is going to be, how does he fit into the way that the NHL moves, right? I mean, this is a very different league. Like, you watch play in the KHL, and the guys, the effort level that they have in, like, the neutral zone is so different than what you see in the NHL or even the AHL or honestly even the SHL. Like, these other top leagues in the world, there is such an eye on making the neutral zone clogged up and having a lot of effort there so that you don't get the puck into your own zone. In the KHL, it almost feels like a ping pong game where it's like, hey, you get a chance on offense, we'll let you come down and get a chance on us, and we'll go back and get a chance. And it's just back and forth and back and forth. There's not a lot of play in the neutral zone like we see so much of in the NHL. And why we look at a player like Quinn Hughes, who's just excellent in the neutral zone. And that's why players look at him and say, like, why is this Corsi higher than the rest of the team? Why is he able to get so much possessions in the offensive zone? It's because of the great work that you do offensively and defensively in the neutral zone. And we haven't seen that from Kuzmenko yet. I think, to me, he stood out in the KHL as a player who was, you know, a guy in the neutral zone that I loved. And I saw this exact same thing with Vasily Podkolzin when he was playing for Ska. It was like, I didn't have to have highlight clips when I was watching these KHL games with him scoring goals. Because to me, like, the highlights that I was watching was him creating turnovers in the neutral zone, creating turnovers at his own red line, and, like, being able to move the puck up with good passes around the center of the ice. I think those are the things that I really just stuck out in his game in the KHL. It's similar with Kuzmenko. Like, he creates turnovers. He forces things. He puts in a really good effort. I think the only thing that I'm worried about is him adjusting to the pace of going up against NHLers, going up against the best in the world. He's going to see top six competition against him. He's going to face top pairings when he's in the NHL. Like, this is going to be very different than, you know, even watching Ska, bringing up another example. Like, Oscar Fantenberg's their top minute muncher. Like, that's one of the guys on the best teams. Like, he ain't facing that type of competition anymore for team's best pairing. He's going up against the best in the world now. So that's kind of the only question for me is, how does he adjust to that? But from everything I've seen in his game, whether it be the shot, the stick handling, the skating, everything, like, I don't have any worries. I just need to see what he looks like in an NHL game at this point. But he's a guy I would be betting on, honestly, from all the games that I watched in the KHL. Like, this is one of the guys that I am very happy the Canucks were able to get. And I do think there's a big reason why so many teams were interested in him and why you could talk to your team free agent. Like, I do think he's going to make at least somewhat of an impact into a team's top nine for a few years to come.
What's the reasonable point expectation for fans here? 40 points, 50 points, 20 goals? What are we looking at for this guy?
Yeah, I think the big thing for him, like, if you look at this from the other end, right, like, the line mates that he was playing with in the KHL are way less, are way worse hockey players than what he's going to be in the NHL here. I think his point totals are going to really rely on assists. Like, I do think that he's going to be able to finish when he gets there, but I really liked a lot of his vision in the KHL, and I'm going to be curious to see how that adjusts to the NHL. If I had to put just, like, an absolute guess and kind of set the over-under, I would probably set the over-under somewhere at, like, 34 points. And I do think he can very easily be, like, very over that, but he could also be under that and not really have success. But I would go 34 to kind of 38 points is kind of like setting the middle ground of what I expect to see this year. And that could be, you know, 14 goals and 24 assists type of thing for an average season. Like, that wouldn't surprise me to see him do that. It would surprise me if he's a 50-plus point player. I think that would be like, wow, this guy really found a good adjustment making play here in the NHL. And if he does something where, you know, he just can't score and he only gets into 40 games and we're talking about him out in Abbotsford, like, that's possible as well. But I think he's going to be somewhere in that, yeah, you know, like 34 to 38 kind of point range if I had to really just guess, like, an area of where he can finish.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Last question from us, Chris, before we get to the people from Twitter here. We all went over our expectations for, or not really the expectations, like, what the bar we're holding the Canucks to this season because of the moves they've made. Like Hussein kind of mentioned, you know, they pushed their chips all in here. And most of us said, you know, we'll win a round of the playoffs. Who said that the Canucks should have to appear in the conference finals this year? What is your expectation slash kind of like bar you'll be measuring the Canucks against for success this season? What does a successful season look like for the Canucks this year?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, if you don't make the playoffs, this is a massive failure, right? And I think even this management group looks at that as well. And in a chance where you come in as a fresh management group, you see this team, and then I think maybe a little bit of a difficult spot because they had so much success, right? Mm. Especially with that management group. But this is a group that's won cups and knows kind of what needs to be done to get to that point. So if they think that this is a group that they wanted to invest in, they didn't trade JT, they didn't try and trade, you know, Tyler Myers or Tanner Pearson or even one of their stars. And, you know, I do think that for anything less than, to me, yeah, you want to win a round in the playoffs, but how hard is that going to be if you're the wild card, right? Like, it kind of depends what team you're playing in the first round. Like, I'll tell you what, if the Canucks get to the first round and they lose to Colorado in six or seven, like, I mean, that's still a big step in the right direction. I think that's kind of the bar for me. If they are the wild card team, I'll set it up. If they're one of the three teams in the Pacific, I think they've done well. If they are a wild card team, I don't think they're winning that first round. But if they end up finishing the season as one of those top three in the Pacific, I think they can give hell to whoever they're playing in this division. I don't think there's a team that really scares me that much aside from maybe the Calgary Flames. Like, I do think that they're an excellent team built top to bottom. But, you know, if the Canucks are matching up against, you know, the Oilers, or say there's a big injury to the Oilers and they're not in there and Vegas is in there, like, I'm not worried about the Canucks, like, getting just absolutely run out of the building against an Oilers team or a Kings team or a Knights team. Like, I do think they have the roster that can stack up with that. So I guess that would be my expectation. I think to have a successful season in the league would be finishing top three in the Pacific.
Okay. No, fair enough. All right, Faber, let's dig into these questions from Twitter. I know you said you didn't read them beforehand, so you're not prepared, which I love. Let's get into it here. What we got here from Andy. Who's that guy? Andy. Can't make time for the podcast on Saturday. He wants to know what your favorite concert is that you've heard from your balcony. I know you've moved into a new place recently. You've been getting a lot of noise from the concerts nearby. What's your favorite concert you've heard from the balcony?
Yeah, well, I know why Andy's not here. It's Saturday night. We're recording. I know he's up. I think the concert that you can hear, you can definitely – the other day they had that it was like four bands or something. Like Def Leppard was there, Poison was there. And BC Place's roof was open for that one. So I went up to the rooftop of our building, and word for word, you could hear every piece of every song. But the weekend, you could hear all that one. That was great, too. Kendrick Lamar, you could hear like almost every, well, you almost couldn't hear anything because the bass was just ridiculous for Kendrick's concert. So like, you couldn't hear much from that, but the best one that I've like heard word for word of a song is probably I Want It That Way by The Backstreet Boys. And like, it started playing, right? So like, it was like probably their last show, their last song of the night. Must have been like 9:45. My fiance's already asleep, but I like woke her up because I was sitting there and I heard like the first few verses of like I Want It That Way. I was like, oh, so I gotta wake her up, so you gotta hear this song. So that's been like the one song that's definitely stuck out where I just hear it so clear, like knew the song so well. And that's been the best one so far since I've been here.
All right, I got another question here from Ryan Hank from the PP1 podcast. This one, I think he's trying to go you a little bit here, but he says, if defense wins championships, then goaltending would be the ultimate focus. Why do you hate goalies?
I just think that is a goaltending stuff. I don't know. I'm just not a goalie guy. Like, in my whole life, why the hell would I want to be the guy putting on the pads? Like, think about like growing up playing hockey. Like, kids that always played goalie were like, I never wanted to be that kid ever. Like, I always wanted to be the guy scoring, I guess. So I thought goalies were the worst position. Like, it's been like that my whole life. And the fact that I do a podcast with a guy who was like a goalie growing up, like, it's kind of ridiculous. And then I go to the rink and you know, all these media members are there, and the guy who talked to me the goddamn most was freaking Kevin Woodley of every single person there. And he's telling me, like, oh, look at this design on this pad. Look at this new mask. Oh, this guy's mascot flown in from Switzerland. I'm like, I don't give a damn. Like, all this stuff you're telling me, like, he's just running like a motor that won't stop, and he's telling me all these goalie things. Like, I didn't hate goalies until I started hanging out with the rink with Woodley. Now it's just too much.
Well, Ace is the goalie here. He's the goalie. He's backstopping our beer league team. So, but yes, I'm with you though on this one, Faber. I definitely hate the goalie talk on your pod. I always you're always fighting for it. So don't give up. All right, don't let Quads bully you too much. All right.
Yeah, no, that's tough. He is a bully, so I'll try and push back a little bit.
Yeah, good stuff. This one from Adam Kirstenblatt, obviously host of the co-host of the Third Line podcast. You can also catch them on the Area 51 Sports Network.
He wants to know, would the Canucks have already won the Stanley Cup if they never switched from the switched to the Orca jersey and just kept the skate jersey? I don't know. Are you a big skate jersey guy? I'm not really sure if I ever remember you really advocating for this.
I mean, come on, guys. Everyone's a skate. I think, at least 10 games a year.
Yeah.
My sweet spot's 10 to 12. 10 to 12 games. Wear it when your team just lost two in a row. Wear it when your team's on a big Friday night here at Rogers Arena. Like, wear it then. Don't set yourself up at the start of the year with dates and then hit them. Like, roll with it, man. When your team needs a black skate jersey, you pull it out. When you're in the playoffs and you need that game, you're up 3-0 in a series, pull it out. Like, pull it out for the right time. But I grew up, obviously, with the West Coast Express there. So, I still even like the Orca, the black skate with some maroon mixed in there. Like, I was a fan of that, too. So, I think I like the black skate. I don't think I would – I'm not a full-time guy. I don't hate this jersey set for the Vancouver Canucks. Blue and green makes sense. I get it.
Yeah.
But I do want to see more of the black skate. I do think we're going to see more of it this year. I'm hoping to get closer to my 10-12 sweet spot than maybe once or twice this year.
Yep, maybe 2011 final goes differently if the Canucks come out in Game 7 with the black skate. You never know.
Would have blown the roof off if they come out. Man, I tell you, that's the timeline I want to
move. Yeah, it's the same. Once they figure out multidimensional travel, we'll all move over there.
Yeah.
All right, we got another question here from Captain at Captain16. I'm not going to read all those numbers. He wants to know, what's Pod Colson's ceiling, in your opinion?
Ceiling. I think
Mark Stone.
That's the floor, actually.
I mean, I think this year specifically really going to give us an indication, right? I think you hear players talk about him. I see him work on the ice. Everybody loves him. It's behind the scenes a little bit at these skates here. Pod Colson's out there with the goalies all the time, and he's putting in so much work. He's the guy that Ian Clark is telling him to tell the other Russians, the Belarusians, how to run these drills and stuff. You can see this kid is just I don't know. In the years that I've covered prospects, I don't think there's been a prospect like Vasily Podkolzin on, how committed he is to this game, how committed he is to winning, how committed he is to whatever organization he's with, or watching him with, Team Russia, the World Juniors. I think back to when they went down, I think it was 3-0 against Canada, and they come back from commercial break. And Ray Ferraro was talking about Pod Colson just going off on his team there for Team Russia at the time. And, this is a guy that, man, when he does get to that point of hitting close to his potential, I hope that we're talking playoff time around that, because that's when I really think you're going to see the best of him. I think that was showcased in his final year in the KHL. What he was able to do in those playoffs were ridiculous. He was the best player on the ice every single night. Every single night that I watched him in those KHL games, he was the best player. He was scoring the biggest goals at the biggest time, and he was just an absolute demon on the forecheck, playing in a fourth-line role and looking like the best player on the ice. So I hope that he gets to that point in the NHL. I don't think he's ever going to be a guy who's, getting up towards the top even 50 of the league in scoring, but I don't think his peak is anywhere that far away from that. I do think that if he's put in the right spot to succeed and he's playing with maybe a JT Miller and a Brock Besser, I don't see why not. This season, he could be a first-line player for the Vancouver Canucks, and he could be a guy that you want to be out there potentially as the way you're getting, the most ice time on this team. I mean, it's not far away from that in my eyes, I don't think. When I look at the rest of the guys here, you want Brock Besser out there a ton. You want to see Connor Garland at 5-on-5 a lot. But I don't think there's – I have time for the argument of thinking Pod Colson should have more 5-on-5 ice time than Brock Besser or Connor Garland or Kuzmenko, Mikheyev. I don't have any doubts that much that this guy isn't a player who makes a ton of an impact at 5-on-5. So to see the point totals kind of tell the whole story isn't really the way that I look at Pod Colson, because I don't know if he's going to be a first-line power play guy for an NHL team in his career. He might get to that point as maybe a net front guy, but he's not going to be all about the points. And I think we as Canucks fans have kind of seen that so far. So I think the ceiling's incredibly high for him, but he's more of a player to me that is the reason why your team's winning games than a player who's leading the league in points or being a top five guy on this team of points. To me, he's a guy who may not be top five in points, but you better bet your ass that he's probably top three in why your team's winning games. That's kind of the way that I look at Pod Colson. And I think he can get to that point with a big splash this season to kind of show us what he's really all about in the NHL.
Right on. I'd love to hear that. Last question here. from Whisker Bob, at Bob Whisker. He wants to know what the chances are of Brady Keeper making the big club or coming in at some point during the season.
Yeah, I think, you know what, like, I wish we would have been able to see him out in Abbotsford last year so I could really give you a good answer on this guy. I haven't seen him play more than a handful of NHL and AHL games, right? Like, I just haven't seen him enough. I think in these skates, he's on the ice. There's times where he's going up against NHL competition and he's probably not fast enough to defend Pod Colton one-on-one. He's not fast enough to defend Kuzmenko one-on-one right now, but I think this is a guy who also just really needs to get back into game shape. And I think it's no knock on his offseason and the work that he's put in. The dude's coming back from a crazy injury that kept him out for the full season, like, and he's probably put in the work. I just think that actually getting back into the swing of things, he's going to need a bunch of AHL games before we start talking about the NHL level. Do I think he could be one of the guys for Abbotsford that is used as kind of a top pairing guy? Like, that's not out of the realm of possibility, but it's also possible with what they have down there in Abbotsford that he's a third line guy on the bench score. Like, it's just going to really depend on what this guy looks like in the AHL first. And do I expect to see him at the NHL this season? I think it would take quite a few injuries, honestly, to see Brady Keeper play NHL games. But I'd love to be proven wrong, and I think I'd love to see him have a lot of success out there. Like, I do think that he's playing above Jet Wu. I think he's playing above, you know, Guillaume Brisebois. Like, I do think he should be a guy who should start the season at least in the top four of the Vancouver Canucks or the Abbotsford Canucks defense score. So I want to see him out in Abbotsford. I just want to see what he can do and how physical he can play and all these good things that we heard about him when he was signed. I want to see those things in the AHL, but I wouldn't go out on a limb and bet that he wasn't going to get to the NHL this season. I think he's got a lot to prove in the A before we start talking about that.
All right. That was our last question from Twitter there, Faber. You know, you've been very generous with your time today, so we'll wrap up the interview here. But, of course, last word on this show always goes to the guests, so... I know I'm sure people already know where to find you, but for those of you who, for you know, some of our listeners who might not, where can they listen to you? Where can they read your work? What's going on with Canucks Convo?
Yeah, we're going five shows a week. YouTube starting on the 26th, so that's exciting. Monday to Friday, that's going to be honestly, it's going to be a bloodbath the first week. You're trying to figure all that out, like make sure that you know, Quads is late to everything. The show's going to be late the first week probably, but a big thing I do want to mention. Guys, it's been the platform here. It's just we're so excited to have Wyatt Arndt join the Canucks Army. The stanchions are free again. The post-game report written by Wyatt Arndt is free. They're available to everyone. They'll be on Canucks Army every night, the night of the game. I'm so jacked up to be a part of the team that's going to put together the stanchions. Like, you know, Wyatt's going to be at home writing the story, you know, cutting 50,000 gifts a season. I'll be in the room talking to the players, and we have sort of confirmation right now that is what it's going to be like.
Nice.
The first time in the last two seasons. We're back in the room. We can talk to players at their stalls. I can get those stories that Wyatt wants. I'll be at Luke Shen's locker every single day, I guess, asking the question. And then Claude is going to be tying everything together and making the articles look pretty and do his thing as an editor, as well as helping with the content as well. So, like, that this trio that we're putting together here for these post-game reports, man, like, I'm so excited to, you know, be a part of what I believe is kind of, you know, carry on the tradition of the reason why I love BD in the first place was reading Botches, Provies, and reading the Athletics. Like, you know, I feel like that's what we're going to be doing at Canucks Army this year. So it's an absolute privilege to be a part of that team putting that together this year. I can't wait to see what we can do as a group.
Awesome. Hey, Faber, love to hear all that. Thanks so much for taking the time, man. We really appreciate you joining the show.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
Yeah, have a good one.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, everybody. Welcome back. Thanks again to Chris Faber for taking the time to join us. That was a super fun interview. Really enjoy talking to Faber every week. Ace has been, you know, just in my cage this whole episode. He's really just trying to get us to wrap this episode as quickly as possible. So I'm just going to rush through the last part of this episode. We'll get our best bets. We'll hit the outro. We'll get out of here. Probably not under an hour like Ace went, but we did our best. Well, I didn't, but he tried. I just want to call out Ace Farina for a second during the favorite interview. During the last question, I was going through the Twitter questions, lean over to this guy, and he's Googling stuff about Meghan Markle on his phone, and see him looking at pictures over here like, this is a place of business, sir. All right, this is stay in your bedroom, okay?
Well, I saw, you know.
I'm just trying to keep up with the royal family stuff. I don't understand most of it.
And so why are you looking it up in the middle of the show?
Her inheritance.
You know what? We're not getting this right now.
I want to know.
Best bets.
Her,
the best bets.
Well, what were you looking up?
Okay, I'm going to start bringing
outro.
Okay, relax. All right, we got the best bets from the CSWZ team. We got best bets from
CSWZ. Okay, I got the Dolphins.
Ace, you need to push the button.
Oh my god.
We got
what button?
The money sign.
Come on, the money sign. What kind of producer are you? You never used. We have all these beautiful sound effects. Look at this thing. Look how many colors there are on it.
Oh, Broncos
Country.
That's right.
You never used any of them.
Broncos Country.
Why does it do that?
Just when I cut the cookie.
What else do you have? Give me something else.
I don't have anything good.
Push something else.
My producer sucks.
No, God!
I don't have anything.
That's
good.
You win the episode more than an hour?
God, please, no. Okay, can we just start?
All right. Okay, yeah. You want to go first?
Yeah, I want to go. Week 2 NFL, I got Miami plus 170 on the money line over Baltimore.
Oh, wait. What? I have this. Hold on. Best bets for CSWCD brought to you by Bet99, the official sports book of the Area 51 Sports Network. Using the link on the Area 51 website, you get up to a $600 bet match on your first deposit. That is the highest in Canada. Please gamble responsibly, people. Ace.
I got Miami, week 2 against the Ravens, plus 170 on the money line.
Okay, perfect. That's weak sauce, but I like it. Okay, yep.
Yep, all right. I'll follow it up with another NFL bin. Week 2, Chargers are on the road, plus 140 on the money line against the Chiefs.
Okay, everybody's going money line here. All right, I'm going to take the Bengals and the Steelers. We're going to this game here. You can get the Bengals to cover 7, get to cover 7 points, and bet the over. Parlay that, you can get plus 264. So, Bengals, cover the spread, over in the game, 44.5. All right? Let's get that. All those odds, obviously, courtesy Bet99, the official sportsbook of the Arizona Sports Network. And if I didn't mention, you can get $600 bet match on your first deposit for new users. Check the link in the description and use that now. All right. Ace, great job. Great episode, guys. Thanks for listening to another week, everyone. Hold on. There it is. You gotta make sure to start from here next time. Thanks for listening to another week, everyone. Find us on all your major podcasting platforms. Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, wherever you get your podcast, just look up Capspace Wins Cups. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Capspace Cups. We're super interactive, so check us out. If you don't listen to Apple iTunes, please go to Apple iTunes and leave us a 5-star review because
I'm a 5-star man.
It really helps with the show. Also, go check out all the other great content on the Area 51 Sports Network. Point Shot Hockey, Canucks Mafia, the 39 Podcast, Terminal City FC, UFO Show, Fan Slam, and Fantastic Writing. It is your home for Vancouver sports content. That's all we got for this week's episode. Talk to you all next week.
Vancouver selects from the University of Michigan, Quinn Hughes.
From Timrå, Elias Peterson.
From Waterloo of the USHL, Brock Besser.
From the London Knights of the Canadian Hockey League, Bo Horvat.
To the Tampa Bay Lightning in exchange for JT Miller.
And Thatcher Demko with an amazing 43-save performance says, let's play game 6.
Ladies and gentlemen, please make some noise and welcome the 14th captain of your Vancouver Canucks.